Expert Insights with Ladium. Our guest says we are living in the age of Aquarius. She's referring to the combination of unrelenting demands, the rapid pace of change, mixed with our high-tech lifestyles, which at times might leave you feeling stressed, stretched, and a little mentally exhausted. Medically trained, Dr. Jenny Brockes helps people to optimize their brain to boost their performance. She brings a wide lens to this timely exploration in her book Future Brain, where she shares 12 keys to creating a high-performance brain. Many of them we explore in this Skype conversation. At the heart of Jenny's book is self-care and how each of us can boost and sustain our mental capital, a term which Jenny explains.
Mental capital is the concept of the combination of emotional intelligence, or EQ, you know, how we respond to stress, where we generate different emotions, along with our level of what's called mental flexibility or agility. That's sort of how we handle large amounts of information and sort of move easily from one task to another. So it's the magic combo of those two things.
Let's now just kind of explore this link between maintaining your brain fitness and acquiring or building or sustaining mental capital.
Brain fitness is the sort of the umbrella term for everything to do with how well we think. And often we sort of look at sort of how well we're operating, our level of focus, how we manage our distractions, how mindful we are in our day-to-day activities, how we work well with others. And we forget that it's really important to remember that first and foremost, we are human beings. And while we have this magnificent brain, in order to think at our very best, we have to keep our brain in best shape. We need to remember we've got physiological requirements, you know, how we eat, how we move, how we sleep. All these things are essential to ensure that we do always deliver our very best performance.
In terms of that brain fitness aspect, can you now link that to this principle of self-care, how we replenish and look after ourselves?
Yeah, self-care is something that too often gets relegated to the bottom of the laundry basket. It's something that we know that's important, but we ascribe greater value to the work we're trying to complete, forgetting that our best performance comes from having a brain that feels rested, it's been refueled, and it's energized. Having enough sort of cognitive stamina or juice to get us through our day is critical. So it's all about sort of remembering that, you know, we have to eat, we have to move around a bit, and we also need to ensure we are fully rested and get enough sleep at night.
Why is it that when we're under pressure, self-care often falls away? What is that in the human pattern?
The reason for that is because the way the brain has evolved is that when we're under siege or feeling threatened, we go into survival mode. And in survival mode, the brain's deciding, you know, are we looking for the nearest exit, or are we going to stay and put up a fight, or are we just sort of rooted to the spot and, you know, we can't move? The fight, flight, or freeze response. And so when we're in that state, we are no longer able to access what's called our executive suite, or the prefrontal cortex, as it's also known, which is our logical, reasoning, analytical, conscious thinking. And we use that part of our brain in order to sort of work out the best strategies moving forward. But when we're under pressure, because we can no longer access that as easily, we're relying far more on our underlying emotions. And emotions are very strong and influence our behaviour in a way that means, you know, we're not thinking as clearly as we might do otherwise.
So let's move through the pillars of good health, and I guess particularly how they impact on our brain. Can we start with nutrition? You know, aside from just a well-balanced diet, what are some of the specific foods or vitamins that we can add to daily life to boost our brain power?
There's an extraordinary amount of nutritional research coming out suggesting that the best way to boost our cognition is to actually go back to adding more greens to our daily diet. Leafy greens in particular, the recommendation is that if we can incorporate some sort of salad every single day, and for one meal, and then for another meal add a wide variety of different vegetables, then that in itself is probably the one single most beneficial thing we can do for improving our cognition, whether it's our mood or our memory or our thinking skills per se. And it's going back to sort of remembering how we've evolved, and we have evolved to eat a wide variety of different foods, but principally the green leafy greens have been shown to be particularly good for better brain health and function. And then to add in the lean protein, particularly sort of chicken and fish or eggs, and then going to things like the seeds and nuts, things that we sometimes associate as being fattening, but in fact contain the right sort of fats for really good brain function. And of course, to remember to drink plenty of water to keep the brain cells adequately hydrated, because even 1% dehydration has been shown to impact how well we think.
Fascinating. There's increasing science that is integrating the whole body and the brain, and strong links have been established now between the interplay between the gut, the microbiome, and also brain health. What is that link?
It is very, very fascinating, and I think we're only just starting to uncover the relevance of this. I think we need to strap ourselves in, because the next couple of years, I think, are going to uncover an enormous amount of greater understanding as to how the gut biome or the bacteria that normally inhabit our gut influence our brain and our thinking skills and our very health. We think we have free will in what we choose to eat, and we now understand that, in fact, many of our choices are not made by us, but they are directed through our gut biome, the bacteria that are colonizing our insides, because they have certain requirements. So, if we like to think perhaps we've got a sweet tooth, but maybe it's actually the gut bacteria that are directing us to seek out those foods which have a higher sugar content. And it's now understood that in some instances, the colonies of bacteria we have may impact in a negative way our mental health and our thinking skills or our mood. And by choosing to alter what food we do eat, we can change that colonization. We can actually shift it in just 3 or 4 days. And what we're learning is that in order to, do our very best, perform better, can be influenced by manipulating what we include in our daily diet. We're now starting to see the relationship between diet, mood, and mental illness, such as anxiety and depression. Often, if you've had one of those horrible bad hair days where everything's gone wrong, The response we often indulge in is we go home and we think we've got to reward ourselves. So we reach for the packet of chocolate biscuits or the tub of ice cream. Those are things we always tend to assume, what we can comfort ourselves with. But it's been shown that eating a high proportion of those types of high-fat, high-sugary foods actually lower our mood further and add to our level of sort of despondency and despair. So I think it's very early stages, and we're going to learn a whole lot more very quickly.
So let's move on to the link between exercise and how it plays a role in amplifying our mental fitness.
This, I think, is probably one of the key areas to promoting better health and cognitive function, particularly in aging. I often get asked to speak to people about, now, what can I do to keep my brain healthy as I get older? And I said, well, the one most important thing you can do is to keep moving. Just stand up for your brain and don't sit as much. Exercise has been shown to be what we call neuroprotective. The more we move, the better our brain will function for us and for a longer period of time, because it not only improves it improves cerebral blood flow, which means you get more nutrients, more oxygen being supplied to your brain, but it also stimulates the release of certain brain chemicals, one of which is called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and that's really important for maintaining healthy neurons or brain cells, and is closely associated with the process called neurogenesis. That's the formation and survival of new neurons. And we produce new neurons every single day, and exercise promotes that activity.
Now, what about the role of sleep in terms of ensuring your brain is working in top order?
Again, the research has shown that sleep is a critical part of keeping brains healthy and functioning well. And it goes against the culture which has evolved, which has really seen sleep as being a bit of a nuisance. You know, people say, oh, I'd get so much more done if I didn't have to sleep. It gets in the way of stuff. And it's overlooking the fact that sleep is critical, because far from resting when we are asleep, our brain is actually more active in some regards than when we're actually physically awake, because it's a time when we consolidate our long-term memory. It's a time when we can uncouple some of those neural connections that we no longer need, allowing us to forget certain bits of information which are no longer required. It helps us to deepen our understanding of the information we've gained through the day. It helps us to regulate our mood, and it also helps us to keep the brain clean, which is sounds an odd concept, but the brain is hugely metabolically active, meaning that it builds up a lot of waste product during the day. And sleep is essential because it's the time when we give our brains essentially a nice good flush and we clean out all the rubbish.
In your book, Future Brain, you also explore the role of mindfulness. There's a case study of a CEO who is described as a high-functioning, chaotic person, and she uses mindfulness techniques to cure her insomnia, become less stressed and more productive. How does mindfulness help us better handle demands?
So mindfulness sort of quietens down the rate of neuronal firing. It reduces stress levels, which automatically improves our access to better thinking processes, especially using our executive suite, you know, how well we think, plan and make decisions. And it just enhances our sense of calm and well-being. And it's been shown through the research to influence our health, for example, down to the level of our chromosomes. It influences our DNA. And I think that is amazing in itself. But now we can harness this technique, and it's basically a mental discipline which you can is easily taught, easily learned, but just has to be put into practice to enable us to calm down our over-busy, overthinking minds, so we regain that sense of clarity and allow ourselves to think well and enjoy life to the fullest.
Let's talk about curiosity and mental stretch. Why is it so important to stretch our mental muscles?
It's just like the physical stretch we need for our other muscles. We've got this beautiful plastic brain, plasticity implying that it's moldable or malleable and adaptive to change that we experience in our environment. When we're kids, we're naturally really, really curious. You know, everything is new, it's novel, and we want to explore and find out how it's put together, how it works, and things like that. And then as grown-ups, we don't lose the ability to be curious, but we sort of put other things in place, and we forget that if we engage in a more playful way with our work and allow ourselves to be more curious about why we do things the way we do, it enables us to sort of look at or reframe the question, well, how can I do this better? Is there an alternative way of getting a better outcome? And it allows us to be more growth or possibility oriented. So by taking time out to be curious gives us a greater connection with the world at large and broadens our perspective, how we see things. And because this brain is plastic, massively plastic, we've got this available to us 24/7 across our entire lives. So, you know, why not take advantage of it and drive this plasticity to our advantage to continuously learn more, understand better, and enhance our brain's capacity?
Harvard research found that people at work are not thinking about what they're doing about 47% of the time. Yet we know the ability to stay focused and sidestep distractions has real implications for the brain. Can you talk through what those implications are?
When I tell people that we're not paying attention 47% of the time, people are a bit aghast. They think, oh my goodness, what am I doing? When we're not fully focused, we're often in a different state where our minds might be wandering and we're just thinking about different things. Often we're thinking about ourselves or different people. And although this might be seen as a bad thing, it actually can be very helpful to us because our brain was designed to enable us to focus on things that are really important, but only in short chunks of time. And I think we've fallen into the trap of thinking that in order to, perform really well, we have to focus hard all day long. And that's just simply not the way the brain was designed. And we're not capable of it. The brain gets tired really easily. Thinking is hard work. And when we're engaged in really, focused thinking, we're chewing even more mental energy more quickly. So it's essential that the brain is allowed to rest in between heavy focused thinking. And if we don't instill what I call a brain break, our brain does it automatically for us. And we switch to this sort of other way of thinking, which is the opposite of focus, but it enables us to use focus in the way it was designed for. Short chunks, great focus, get your work done, do it really well, and then take a break.
And how often should those brain breaks be? Is there any guiding principles around that?
There are some different guiding principles, but I think it comes back to what works best for your brain, because all brains are slightly different. We have this, what we call the ultradian rhythm, peaks and troughs of energy that pulsate through our day. And each cycle lasts about 90 minutes. So it's recommended that we shouldn't really be working really hard using our focus for more than, say, 60 to 90 minutes. Some people find that they work really good well in, say, 20 to 25 minute increments. And that's, if that's what works for you, go with it. But 60 to 90 minutes is okay. And then take a rest from your focus for about 15 to 20 minutes to allow your brain to refresh and reboot itself. And that's often the time when we default to that mind wandering time. And that's actually really, really helpful to us because that's the time when we sometimes come up with our greatest solutions to the problems that we've been facing and our greatest insights.
There's a growing body of research about the effects of compassion on the brain. Why does compassion boost well-being so significantly?
This is something that resonates very strongly for me because I think we're in a place where compassion sometimes gets lost in our own worlds or in society as a whole. Self-compassion, I think, is particularly important because we are our greatest self-critics. We've always got that little voice going on in the back of our heads telling us that we're no good, we're not good enough. And if we listen to that inner critic, we hold ourselves back. If we are kinder to ourselves, it means that we can be more accepting of ourselves. And that then generates our capacity to be more accepting and more tolerant of other people. And in this world we live in today, I think there's a huge need for greater compassion and understanding of others.
It's often said that we're living in a time of unprecedented change. And I think for many people, that unrelenting sea of change can feel overwhelming. What are some ideas you have to help people build that mental flexibility so they can cope with the changes more readily?
Ah, yes. Where to start with this one? This is huge. I think the first place to start is to reflect on what is it that makes us feel that change can be so difficult. And I think the common answer to that is that we look forward to the changes that we impose on ourselves because we see them as being beneficial or something to look forward to. And it's when we feel change is being foisted onto us by other people that sometimes that puts us in a state of threat. When we are in a state of threat or the brain feels threatened, we immediately bunker back down into that survival mode again. And it's just the way our brain is wired to react. Every time we are faced with something new or different, the brain makes choice. Is this something that's okay, something that is going to lead to something that I'm going to enjoy or feel rewarded by, or is this something that's potentially dangerous and I need to get away from it as fast as possible? And because the brain's primary driver is to keep us safe, the common scenario is we go to that place of danger first. So we assume it's dangerous initially before we've got all the information available to us. So if we're looking to sort of manage change more effectively and not feel so worn down by it or fatigued, it's about sort of looking at it from a different perspective and saying, well, change is normal. Change is desirable. Change can be really good, but we have to understand why this change is required, especially when it's being introduced by a second or a third person. So if, for example, at work, you're doing your job, you're doing it well, but you're under pressure, there's a lot going on, and then somebody comes along and says, hey, as of Monday, we're going to be doing this different, and there's this new policy that you've got to read and take on board, and it's just more stuff and it's more load on our cognition, and that just adds to stress levels and puts us, you know, in that sort of dangerous place where we think, uh-oh, too much, warning bells are going off and we want to move away from it. If we can just sort of take away that stress by looking at, what's the benefit of this? What's in it for me? How can I contribute to this and remove that threat? It makes it so much easier to then say, yeah, I don't have to be frightened of this. If we take away the fear aspect, it's about, yeah, let's give it a go. Let's dip the toe in the water, try it out. If it doesn't work, that's okay, and then move forward from there. And I think just changing our perspective, because I think so often people talk about change just in the negative, and we forget that it's normal and it's highly desirable.
So much to do and so many interruptions. Learn to dodge distractions to perform at your peak. Drawing on neuroscience, Boost Your Brain and Wellness is a micro-training program that strengthens your composure, focus and performance. Train your brain in less than 10 minutes a day at leadium.com.au.